We started this campaign about 10 months ago, and we were at 3% in the polls, about 60, 70 points behind Secretary Clinton. We have since won 9 states. Almost all of them by double-digit numbers. Last week, to everybody's surprise, we won in Michigan. And if you keep it a secret and not tell those guys over there, I think we're going to win a lot of states on Tuesday. Now, this is what we have learned during this campaign, a simple but pretty profound lesson. When the voter turnout is high, when working people and young people and older people come out and are determined to end establishment politics and establishment economics, when that voter turnout is high, we win. And that is part of what the political revolution is about, is getting people to stand up, fight back, and create a government that works for all of us, not just the 1%. But when the voter turnout is low, we lose. So our challenge in the next 2 days is to make sure we have a huge voter turnout. Now, this campaign is succeeding because we are doing something very radical in American politics. We're telling the people the truth. And you know what? Telling the truth is not always easy, and it is not always pleasant, because a lot of the things that are going on in this country are wrong. A lot of people are being hurt. But unless we have the courage to look at reality, there is no way that we can rectify the problems and go forward. Let me just give you a few examples of what I mean. Number one, I'm the former chairman of the U.S. Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs, and I have fought as hard as I can to make sure that those people who put their lives on the line to defend us get the health care and the other benefits they so richly deserve. And I have had the privilege of meeting with veterans from World War II to Iraq and Afghanistan. And I think about the sacrifices they have made to protect and defend American democracy. And then I look at what is happening today. And what is happening today, and I have to say this simply and straightforwardly, we have a corrupt campaign finance system which is undermining American democracy. Now, democracy is really not that complicated. It means You got a vote, and you got a vote, and you have a vote. And if you want to vote for me, great. You want to vote against me, that's okay. But what democracy is not about is billionaires buying elections. And democracy is not about Republican cowardly governors trying to suppress the vote and make it harder for people to vote. We have, as a nation, sadly, one of the lowest voter turnouts of any major country on earth, and the idea that we have cowardly Republican governors working overtime trying to figure out ways that they can prevent people from voting is an absolute disgrace. And I say to those governors and members of the legislature who vote for voter suppression, if you don't have the guts to participate in a free and fair election, get out of politics, get another job. Here we are trying to involve young people in the political process. Just the other day, in Ohio, we won a major victory. The Republican Secretary of State changed the rules there, and he tried to make it impossible for people who are under 18 today but would be 18 in November to participate in the primary there. We took them to court. We won. And if I'm elected President of the United States, we are going to have a very, very aggressive Department of Justice challenging every one of these voter suppression laws. But it is not only a corrupt campaign finance system and voter suppression. We are living in a nation today, as all of you know, which has a rigged economy. And what that means is that today in America, we have the highest rate of income and wealth inequality of almost any major country on earth, and the gap between the very, very rich and everybody else is growing wider. Now, you're not going to see this on TV very often or read it in the newspapers, and that's another story that we have to deal with. But here is the fact. The top one-tenth of 1%, not 1%, one-tenth of 1% now owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%. The 20 wealthiest people in this country, 20 people, own more wealth than the bottom half of America, 150 million Americans. You got one family, the Walton family of Walmart, owns more wealth. I'm glad you feel that way, because I'm going to tell you a story about the Waltons in a second. But that one family owns more wealth than the bottom 40% of the American people. So what we are looking at, you know, this is not some kind of struggling third world country. This is the United States of America, where a handful, a small number of billionaires significantly control the political life of this country, because they can make unlimited campaign contributions and they control the economy as well. Now, I want to give you one out of many examples I could give you of a rigged economy. Walton family owns Walmart. They are the wealthiest family in America. Walmart is the largest private sector employer. Because Walmart pays wages that are so low, many of their employees are forced to go on Medicaid, food stamps, and subsidized housing. Do you know who pays for that Medicaid, food stamps? That's what a rigged economy is when working families subsidize the wealthiest family in America. So I say to the Walton family, get off of welfare, pay your workers a living wage. And what this campaign is about in its deepest sense is asking the American people to think outside of the box. Think outside of the options that the Congress and the corporate media ask you to choose. In America today, we have millions of people working not one job, but two jobs and three jobs to cobble together some income and some health care. Question, and I want you all to think about it. In the last 30 years, as everybody knows, there has been an explosion of technology. In the last 30 years, worker productivity has substantially increased, right? Almost every worker now is producing a lot more than that worker did 30 years ago. If that is the case, why is it that millions of people are working longer hours for lower wages? All right. Second point is mom is out working, dad is out working, incredible hours, kids are out working, and by the way, we work, people don't know this, in America we work the longest hours of any people in the industrialized world, work longer than the Japanese. Meanwhile, with everybody working long hours, 58% of all new income is going to the top 1%. You ready for a radical idea? Yeah. We're going to create an economy that works for everybody, not just the 1%. But it is not just a corrupt campaign finance system. It is not just a rigged economy. We have a broken criminal justice system. And together, we are going to end institutional racism and that broken criminal justice system. Again, think outside of the box. Ask yourselves another simple question. This is the wealthiest country in the history of the world, and yet we have more people in jail than any other country on earth, including China, four times our size. Why? Why are so many people rotting away behind bars in this country? So we have got to do some important things. For a start, we have got to understand that when youth unemployment in America for white kids is 33%, for Latino kids 36%, That's unemployment and underemployment. For African American kids, 51%. What we are going to do is invest in our young people, in jobs and education, not jails and incarceration. And when we talk about criminal justice reform, what we are going to understand is that if a police officer breaks the law like any other public official, that officer must be held accountable. Now, I am a former mayor. I've worked with police officers in my city and all over my state and all over this country. Vast majority of police officers in this country are honest and hardworking, and they do a very difficult job. But nobody is above the law. Second of all, we have got to demilitarize local police departments. Third, we have got to make police departments look like the diversity of the communities they serve. In my state of Vermont and nearby New Hampshire, we have an epidemic of heroin overdosing and opiate abuse. Here too, okay. And this is what we have got to understand, because this is a national problem. What we have to understand is that substance abuse and addiction is a health issue, not a criminal issue. Instead of locking people up, we've got to get them the treatment they need when they need it. Another very important issue in criminal justice. Turns out that over the last 30 years in this country, millions of Americans have received criminal records, police records, for possession of marijuana. It is long overdue for us to rethink the so-called war on drugs. Now, I say that, and I mean this seriously. I'm not here advocating for marijuana or advocating against marijuana, but this is what I am advocating for. I do not want to see lives destroyed with people getting police records and then finding it hard to go out and get a job or do other things in their life. That's got to end. Now, it turns out, as some of you may know, that the federal government's Controlled Substance Act, as a Schedule I drug, lists marijuana right alongside heroin. I hope and pray that everybody here understands that heroin is a killer drug. Now, we can argue, and scientists do, about the pluses and minuses of marijuana, but no sane person thinks marijuana is the equivalent of heroin. And that is why I have introduced legislation that would take marijuana out of the Federal Controlled Substance Act. As you all know, states have the right to legalize marijuana. Four states have already done that. But in my view, and that's the business of the states, but in my view, possession of marijuana should not be a federal crime. Now, let me say a few words about some of the strong differences of opinion that I have with Secretary Clinton. And one of them starts with how we fund our respective campaigns and who we are dependent on. Now, when we began this campaign 10 months ago, we had to make a decision. And the decision is, do we do what every other campaign does and form a super PAC and beg the wealthy and the powerful for campaign contributions? That's what we concluded. We spent about 1/10 of a second on that, and then we concluded that we do not represent Wall Street or the drug companies. And that we do not want a super PAC. Now, that was a very brave thing to do, but the next problem we had is, how in God's name do we raise the money that we need? That was a little bit harder. And what we basically did was something pretty simple. We said to the American people, look, if you want to support a campaign and a candidate who is going to help create an economy that works for all of us, not just billionaires, help us out. And the most remarkable thing happened, something that I, honest to God, would never have predicted in a million years. As of today, this campaign has received over 5 million individual contributions. That is more individual contributions than any candidate in the history of America at this point of the campaign. Anybody here know what the average contribution is? I love that, I really do. It's $27. And when I talk about a political revolution, this is part of what that revolution is about. What we are proving is that, in fact, you can run a winning national campaign without being dependent on Wall Street and billionaires. To paraphrase Abraham Lincoln at Gettysburg, this is a campaign of the people, by the people, for the people. Now, Secretary Clinton has chosen another approach to raise money. And she has established a number of super PACs. In the last filing report, her largest super PAC reported raising $25 million from special interest, $15 million from Wall Street. In addition, as some of you may know, Secretary Clinton has given speeches behind closed doors to Wall Street firms, got paid $225,000 per speech. Now, what I think is if you're going to get paid $225,000 a speech, it must be a fantastic speech. It must be a speech that could transform this world. It must be Shakespearean. And if that speech is so great, I would hope the Secretary would share it with the American people. Because I think the American people want to know if what she says behind closed doors to Wall Street is the same thing she says to the American people. Now, there is another area of great importance that we have a strong difference of opinion on and a very different record. Now, this is not a sexy issue. The media does not talk about it at all. And you can always tell that the more important the issue is, the less the media will talk about it. That's a pretty good. And this is the issue of our disastrous trade policies. And by that I mean NAFTA, CAFTA, permanent normal trade relations with China, and many, many other trade agreements. I was elected to the Congress in 1990, and it took me about 8 seconds to figure out that these trade agreements would be a disaster for American workers. They were written, not to shock all of you, they were written by corporate America. And what their goal was to say, why should they pay workers in Missouri or Vermont $20-$25 an hour working in a factory when they can shut down here, go to Mexico, go to China, go to low-wage countries, and pay people there pennies an hour? And that, of course, is exactly what has happened. Since 2001, we have seen over 50,000 factories in America shut down. Millions of workers have lost decent paying jobs. Now, I have, from day one, been a leader in opposition to these disastrous trade policies. Secretary Clinton has supported virtually all of them. Now, as a result of a lot of pressure put on her by the trade union movement, and every union in this country is opposed, as I am, to this Trans-Pacific Partnership. That's right. All right. Now, I was one of the early leaders in opposition, but as a result of a lot of pressure, Secretary Clinton eventually came out against the TPP. That's the good thing. But just the other day, that she says she wants to make it tougher for automobiles to be imported to this country under the TPP. Well, that's good. But the truth is, that is not good enough. That whole agreement stinks. We got to kill it and start over again. In Vietnam is part of the TPP, the minimum wage is 65 cents an hour. You know what? I don't think American workers should be forced to compete against people who are working for 65 cents an hour. That's wrong. And our message to corporate America is, if they want us to purchase their products, they better start manufacturing those products in Missouri, Vermont, and in America. All of us want to help the poorest people in the world. But you don't have to destroy the middle class of this country to help poor people abroad. Another issue. Everybody here understands that one of the very important duties of the President of the United States is to conduct sensible foreign policy. In 2002, we had a debate in this country over the most important foreign policy issue that we have seen in the modern history of this country, and that was over Iraq. I listened very, very carefully to what President Bush and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and all these guys had to say. I listened very carefully, because when you're dealing with war and peace issues, you know that there are people in your own state who are going to go off to war and will not come home alive. So I listened to that debate, and I concluded that the President, President Bush and Cheney, were not telling the truth. I voted against that war. Secretary Clinton was in the Senate then. She heard exactly the same evidence that I heard. She voted for that war. Now, the reason that we are doing well in this campaign and why we have the energy and why we have the enthusiasm is that we are spending our time listening to the American people, not listening to wealthy campaign contributors. In fact, we have had meetings like this all over this country, and if my memory is correct, over 600,000 Americans have come out to meetings like this. And when we listen to the people, this is what they tell us. Working people tell us they cannot make it on $8 or $9 an hour. They tell us that the minimum wage of $7.25 is a starvation wage, and that wage has got to be raised to a living wage. And that living wage is $15 an hour. This campaign is listening to senior citizens. And what senior citizens are telling us and disabled veterans are telling us, they can't make it on $11,000 or $12,000 a year Social Security. Republicans want, in most instances, to cut Social Security. And I've got bad news for them. Not only are we not going to cut Social Security, we're going to expand Social Security benefits. This campaign is listening to women. And what women are saying is, how does it happen that they go out and get a job and they end up making 79 cents on the dollar compared to men doing the same work? And I know that every man in this room will stand with the women in the fight for pay equity. This campaign is standing with the African American community. They are telling me, and everybody else in America is telling me, they are tired of seeing unarmed people shot and killed. This campaign is listening to our Latino brothers and sisters. They are telling me that they are tired of living in the shadows, living in fear. They want comprehensive immigration reform. And they want a path toward citizenship. And if Congress does not do its job, I will use all of the executive powers the president has to make that happen. This campaign is listening to our brothers and sisters in the Native American community. All of you know that the Native Americans, the first Americans, have been lied to, have been cheated for centuries. If I'm elected president, they will be treated with honesty and respect. Now, in this campaign season, you got a lot of Republicans running around your state, running around the country, talking about family values. And I want everybody here to be very clear about what Republicans mean when they talk about family values. What they mean is that no woman in this room, in this state, in this country, should have the right to control her own body. I disagree. What they mean when they talk about family values is that our gay brothers and sisters should not have the right to be married. I disagree. My wife Jane and I have been married 27 years. We have 4 kids, 7 grandchildren. And we believe in family very, very much. But when we talk about family values, it is very different than what Republicans say. And we point out, and this again is thinking outside of the box and asking a simple question. We ask, how does it happen that we are the only major country on earth that does not guarantee paid family and medical leave? When a mother in this country gives birth, she should not be forced to go back to work in a week or two because she lacks the income to stay home. And that is why, together, we're going to pass legislation guaranteeing 3 months paid family and medical leave. Several weeks ago, I was in Flint, Michigan, and what I saw there was literally beyond comprehension. In the United States of America in the year 2016, children are being poisoned by lead in the water in a water system which has broken down. Flint may be the worst case, but we have water systems all over America that are not functioning well. We have wastewater plants. We have roads. In my state, many of our bridges are in disrepair. That is why I have proposed $1 trillion to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure. And put our people back to work rebuilding the infrastructure. I am a member of the U.S. Senate Committee on the Environment. I have talked to scientists all over the world, and let me tell you what they are telling me. Climate change is real. It is caused by human activity. And if we as a nation do not get our act together soon, a very bad situation will become much worse. We have a moral responsibility to leave this planet in a way that is healthy and habitable to the next generations. We have got to take on the fossil fuel industry. And to tell them that their short-term profits are not worth it compared to the future of this planet. Everybody here knows that we are living in a competitive global economy, and you also know that hundreds of thousands of bright young people cannot afford to go to college even though they're qualified. That is wrong. It is wrong for those young people. It is wrong for the future of our economy. In the year 2016, when we talk about public education, it is not good enough to be talking about first grade through 12th grade. The world has changed, the economy has changed, people need more education. And that is why I believe that we must create a situation in which public colleges and universities are tuition free. And we have also got to significantly lower the horrific burden of student debt. That millions of people are experiencing. Now, sometimes my critics say, well, Bernie, that's a great idea. You're Santa Claus, you're a nice guy. How are you going to pay for this? I will tell you how we pay for it. All of you know that 8 years ago, Wall Street's greed and illegal behavior destroyed our economy. Congress bailed them out. Well, I believe that now is the time to impose a tax on Wall Street speculation. Now is the time for Wall Street to help the middle class of this country. All of you know that real change in America never comes from the top on down. It always comes from the bottom on up. That is true of the workers' movement and the creation of unions. It is true of the civil rights movement. It is true of the women's movement. It is true of the gay rights movement. Always from the bottom on up. Change comes about when people look at the status quo and they say, it's wrong, it's not acceptable. And that's where we are today. We look out in the status quo, we have massive levels of income and wealth inequality while the middle class disappears. That is wrong. We see a proliferation of millionaires and billionaires, and we have the highest rate of childhood poverty of almost any major country on earth. That is wrong. We are the only major country on earth that doesn't guarantee paid family and medical leave or health care for all. And I will fight to make sure that every man, woman, and child in this country has health care as a right. So what is happening now and what this campaign is about is people are looking around and they're saying, you know what, we're a great country. But we can do much, much better. Now, one of the criticisms leveled at me is they say, well, Bernie's a nice guy, combs his hair really great. You like the suit, dresses very nice. Big question is whether it is a black suit or a brown suit, I don't know. But one of the great issues of the campaign. But what they say is, despite his hair and his suit, he really can't win the general election. So let me correct that for anybody who believes it. If you look at national poll after national poll, including one just came out a few days ago from NBC and Wall Street Journal, we were defeating Donald Trump by 18 points. And that is true of most of the national polls. We win, and we usually win by a pretty good margin. And by the way, in almost, not all, but almost all of these polls, we do much better against Trump than Hillary Clinton does. But polls go up and down, but I will tell you why the American people will defeat Donald Trump. They will defeat Donald Trump because the American people do not want a president who insults Mexicans, yeah, They will not accept a president who insults Muslims. You cannot be a president and insult one of the large religions in this world. You know, some of you may or may not know this. There was a debate in the United Kingdom a couple of months ago. As you know, the United Kingdom is the longest standing ally we have. They were debating whether or not they should allow Donald Trump to come into their country. Now, how are you going to have a president who can't even visit your best ally? We will defeat Donald Trump because the American people do not want a president who insults women. The American people do not want a president who insults African Americans. Now, some of you may have forgotten this, but a few years ago, Trump was one of the leaders of the so-called Bertha movement, questioning, this was not small stuff. What he was doing was questioning the legitimacy of President Obama, the legitimacy of him being President of the United States. Now, I have always found it interesting. President Obama's father was born in Kenya. My father was born in Poland. I find it interesting that nobody has asked for my birth certificate. You think maybe it might have something to do with the color of my skin as opposed to President Obama's? I think so. The American people are not going to elect a president who insults veterans and people like Senator McCain. How you can insult somebody who was a brave and courageous POW is beyond my comprehension. The American people will defeat Donald Trump because they understand that bringing our people together, black and white and Latino and Asian American and Native American, trumps dividing us up. The American people will defeat Donald Trump because they understand that community, helping each other, trumps selfishness. And most importantly, the American people understand what every religion on earth has taught us, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, that at the end of the day, love trumps hatred. Now, on Tuesday, as all of you know, there is a very important primary election here in Missouri. if there is a large voter turnout, will win. Let's create a large voter turnout. Thank you very much.